The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, March 19th, 2023. And I'm joined today by two individuals, one of whom claims that Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and Orange Cassidy are better draws than Roman Reigns. And returning this week. That is Chris Gullo, obviously. And returning this week from his private meeting with Vince McMahon, perhaps, Jesse Collins. Hello.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just Vince, but so I wouldn't really call it a private meeting.
I see. You know, who else was there? Mohammed bin Salman, was he there?
Yeah, Manjeet Singh was there.
Manjeet Singh, the former independent director of WWE.
Yep, he was there. Berrios was there, of course. Berrios had to, like, sit outside, but he was there.
Okay. Interesting. all right. I was at a ESW show last night, and so was Chris Gullo. I was just there as a spectator. I was not working in any capacity, not in an official capacity or unofficial capacity. I saw about the second half of the show. It was good to hang out and socialize and stuff. Was it a good show?
Yeah, it was a fun night. Had a lot of talent, GCW talent around the show, and there was a lot of GCW personnel just hanging out at the show too.
Was this a GCW house show? Is Empire State Wrestling now a GCW affiliate?
GCW House Rules? No, I mean it was just a friendly gathering, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll begin. We've got a lot of live events talk on this episode this week. We'll be heavily relying on WrestleTix data here today. And by the way, if you can like and subscribe and share this, that'll help us out a lot. And if you have a question or comment of your own, a super chat will be accepted if you're watching live on YouTube and you want to submit your comment or your question. We will address it. But the AEW house rules, I have to be careful with what I say here because I have Tony Khan correcting me in my head here, not literally. But I would say this is the first AEW house show, but I know that's not technically true. There was that Jacksonville show that they ran a couple of years ago, which had a what how was that branded? That had the word house in it. I forget what it was.
The house always wins.
Wasn't it the house always wins. That's right. Another casino reference. But this was House Rules last night in Troy, Ohio. WrestleTix has the number at 3,200 tickets distributed, which is reportedly close to a sellout. There's a lot of general admission. There's general admission, apparently, for this. So not everything was a designated seat, but the GA was $20. We could think through like how much money this show made. So I'm sure we've got a lower ticket price here than usual. Pay-per-views will go up to, I think as high as, you know, $90 or $100 in terms of an average ticket price. But if we did the math here and say, I don't know, say there's an average ticket price of like $35, and let's assume to be aggressive that all 3,200 were paid, then we've got, you know, $112,000 for a live gate. And if we add in, like, say, $11 per capita for venue merch, then we can get to almost $150,000 for a gross for this event. I think there's a lot of questions around whether this house shows can be done profitably and to what extent it's worth it to do house shows.
There was a tremendous amount of concern about AEW doing a house show and, oh my God, what if they don't make money off this house show, Brandon? What a bad decision this is going to be if AEW, you know, runs a little bit in the red on this house show. And I don't know, like, I was listening to like some of like the people talking before the show about, oh, what's the lineup? Are they going to have title matches? With WWE does house shows, people know that they don't matter, but that's okay because they've accepted that. And AEW, will the fans reject it because they feel like the results don't matter, which we don't know if the results don't matter for AEW house shows because they have only done one previously. But I would imagine.
Have we heard anything coming out of this as far as the results? Were there any major angles on this show?
Not that I knew.
I don't believe there were any. I can't. I've seen the results. I don't believe there were any major like angles that you would need to see, like that would maybe come back on television. Like things like Jeff Jarrett won. He beat
Jeff Jarrett defeated Brian Pillman Jr.
He beat Brian Pillman Jr. Obviously, Moxley was in the main event. I just think
I can confirm that Tony Khan came out for a quick promo thanking everyone.
Yeah, I would say that 3,200 fans is a very good number. I would say that running close to a sell. I would say that running close to a sellout would imply that if we're going to play this game where we're very concerned about Tony Khan's checkbook and we're very concerned about AEW profitability, I would imagine that getting near a sellout would almost guarantee that. It made the company that the show was profitable, or at least in the black, or broke even. It would be really kind of bad business to run a show where you have a sellout and that's not enough to get you in the black.
So, if I can get to a gross of what did I just say? Almost $150,000.
Well, are you factoring in that? Are you saying every ticket is $20 with that estimate?
I based that on an average ticket price of $35.
Okay. Yeah, because my understanding is floor seats were like your designated seats, and then the $20 general admission was for sitting, you know, in the grandstand or whatever they have there. I mean, I'm not familiar with that building, but I've been familiar with buildings of similar size, and that's I feel like how they tend to operate for these kind of wrestling shows. I thought it was, you know, 3,200 fans for, you know, 3,200 fans would beat some of the Dynamites that they've done. I think it's probably around the same as like that Laredo, Texas Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And maybe in like one of their shows like Miami and certainly the Jacksonville Dynamites. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that they ran it in Troy, Ohio, which is not, I think, anywhere close to a major.
Not far from where they just did a Dynamite.
Yeah.
Correct.
So it's an hour and 10 minutes from Cincinnati. But the Troy population is a little over 26,000. So 3,200 is 12% of the whole city's population, which is pretty substantial.
And I think it's closer to Dayton, Ohio, which they were in like, you know, like probably 6 weeks ago or something like that.
February 1st, they did Dayton, Ohio, 4,700.
Yeah. So, I would say I think like if we're looking at the house shows, okay, this is the first house show. Does the appeal of like the first, or I guess in a literal sense, the second house show ever, does that draw more because it's the first? I don't know if that's really the case. But with that being said, given the size of this venue and the size of the market that they're in, I would say that 3,200 seems like almost like the low end of what they could potentially draw. They have another house show coming up that they've announced, and it's in a much bigger market, a much bigger venue. So it'll be interesting to see.
This is the Calgary show?
The Saddle Dome, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think this was profitable, this show?
I don't really care that it was profitable, but I would imagine that it was. Is there something to the idea that Tony Khan is running these, he doesn't care if they're profitable. He thinks that they have value in other places. And so that we sold out and it's still not profitable. That's not a huge concern for him. I guess that's a possibility, but it's not like they drew half a house. So I would imagine it isn't. We don't know enough about, I don't think this venue is particularly expensive to rent. I'm not sure what the cost of talent there, how much did it cost to get certain talent there? How much did it cost to produce the show? Did they save a lot in production value because it was a house show as opposed to a Dynamite taping, which I'm sure is much more expensive. Travel costs, hotel costs.
I think a Dynamite taping costs them over $500,000 to produce. Mm-hmm. How much cheaper was this because it was a house show? I don't know. I see they were filming it. I don't think, based on the pictures, I don't think they had a huge stage or their normal Dynamite stage. So the production, I would not think, was as expensive as usual.
Interesting enough, I saw they used the AEW dark, like entrance curtains and around the ring too, the apron and stuff like that, which is, I thought they might have a custom thing for that, but they used AEW dark stuff.
But considering that I believe pretty confidently that it costs them over $500,000 to do a Dynamite taping, I don't know that it cost them less than $150,000 to run this show. So I don't know that it would be. I'm not confident that this was profitable, and I would lean towards thinking that this did not make money.
So I think that's probably it for AEW, right?
Well, are there other benefits to running house shows that offset the costs?
Yes, but those are different types of investments. So if we're under the assumption now that it didn't make money, why would a company do this? Why would a company run a show where they sell out or come very close to a sellout and they are not making money off of it? Why would a company do that? I guess the argument would be, and I wrote about this for WrestleNomics.com, which would be, you're making an investment in spreading your product to a new audience. You're making an investment in bringing the AEW live product. And by all accounts that I have heard, I've heard the show was very fun, that the crowd was into it. People who were maybe not regular AEW viewers that went to the show, maybe they'll become regular AEW television viewers because they had such a good time at the show. That's how a lot of people foster their appreciation for pro wrestling, is they go to a show that comes to their town and they enjoy it. WWE doesn't make money off of live events. WWE has rarely made money off of live events, and they certainly haven't made money off of house shows. I think that's fair to say.
At this point, again, they're probably losing based on how thin the margin is on operating income that we see in their public reporting.
Right. And so, okay, so WWE does this, and WWE also runs a lot of their house show. They do not run their house shows in major markets, with a few exceptions here and there. But for the most part, WWE house shows are in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and, you know, Davenport, Iowa, and, you know, Fort Collins, Colorado, and like these smaller towns that are not going to get a Dynamite, are not going to get a Raw or SmackDown, just like how Troy, Ohio is unlikely to get a Dynamite or Rampage taping. And so it also allows you to bring your product to more places than just the larger markets, which are always going to get your television because that's where you can maximize your profits.
Yes. So I was thinking too about whether AEW is profitable overall. And I think 2020 was a different year for AEW financially. So in 2020, or just after 2020, Tony Khan made a comment to Forbes saying that if not for the video game investment that they had made that year, that AEW would have been profitable. But that was also the year where, and maybe that was 2021. In any case, in both 2020 and 2021, they were running a lot of shows in Jacksonville at, what's the name of the venue?
Daly's Place.
which the Khan family owned, number one. And number two, they were doing a lot of tapings where they would tape multiple shows in a sitting, and there wasn't load in and load out, and they weren't touring, which raises the cost by millions if you're doing that year round. So I think the bar for, and the expense for AEW to run year round touring now as they did in 2022 is much higher. So the revenues in 2022 versus 2021 haven't raised dramatically. I believe they made, you know, something like $80 million in 2021 and something like $100 million in 2022. And I think Tony Khan made a comment to Bloomberg in 2022, or the article where he's like pasted onto the Ultimate Warrior's body. I think he made a comment to the effect that they made about $100 million in 2022. But I don't think that the company's profitable in 2022. And I don't think that they'll be profitable until they get a big upgrade in TV rights fees, assuming that they do. Just because the expense of touring year round is much higher than it was in the pandemic time, where they were able to save a lot of expense. And we saw that in WWE's case too, where WWE was actually more profitable during the pandemic while they were running at the PC, or the Thunderdome did raise expenses quite a bit. But while they were running at the PC, they saved a lot of money. So I don't think they're profitable yet. And maybe the accomplishment of becoming profitable is very much tied to the degree to which they're able to get a raise in TV rights fees in the next round. So we will move to, so AEW did announce this week that they are going to Canada, back to Canada, to do Forbidden Door in Toronto on June 25th. And they're also going to do Hamilton Dynamite Rampage, Edmonton Dynamite Rampage, Saskatoon Dynamite, Regina Rampage, and the Saddle Dome house show during the Calgary Stampede cultural event. So we'll see how that goes. I will probably go to Forbidden Door in Toronto, since I can probably get home 2 hours later, whenever the press conference or the event ends. So that'll be interesting. Goal, will you be going?
Pencil me in, sorry. Pencil me in. Yeah.
Okay. And it's to look at how some of the shows leading up to WrestleMania are doing. Stand and Deliver, which is actually in Pacific time at 9:45 a.m. at the Crypto Arena. Currently, 6,608 tickets are out for that event, for the NXT event, according to WrestleTix. And that is better than they did last year already, which did 4,366 with the classic between Dolph Ziggler and Braun Breaker. So it's well ahead of that. I don't know if this speaks to the NXT brand in that it's doing better, and we see that in ratings somewhat. They're pretty much flat right now in terms of total viewership, but in the younger demos, they're doing much better in ratings. NXT is now versus last year. And then the Supercard of Honor event, 3,669 tickets distributed for their show on Friday at 4 p.m. So that's going to be what time? That's going to be 7 p.m. Eastern. They've got over 3,600 tickets out for that event, for the Supercard of Honor, which is already way ahead of where Supercard of Honor was last year at the end in Garland, Texas, at the Curtis Caldwell Center, with just under 2,000 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix count. According to Tony Khan in the media scrum, they did 2,000. So both of those shows doing better than they were in the year before. WrestleMania itself, I don't know how last year tracked at this time, but they're at 56,000 and 57,000 out for Saturday and Sunday, which is almost 10,000 behind where they ended up last year for Saturday and Sunday WrestleMania, with 64,500 and 65,500 for day one and day two last year. So, and that is as of a week ago, March 12th. So I assume they're somewhat ahead of these numbers now, but probably not way ahead of where these numbers are now. So there's that. we have a market to market comparison of WWE events over the last, this is since, I think this is everything after Elimination Chamber. So showing that the house shows, house show last night, is that right? Is that what that was? Yeah. House show last night in Milwaukee was flat. Fargo, North Dakota, slightly down. But most of the rest of these are
once you lose that Fargo market, it's pretty much, it's a bad sign.
Mm-hmm. So we have, isn't from Fargo in South Dakota?
Fargo's in North Dakota. Oh, it's my God. North Dakota. Brandon.
Yeah.
You're going to run off the Fargo market now for us.
And South Dakota is going to be mad about that too.
Yeah,
but for the most part, a lot of these events market to market are up for WWE. So Milwaukee flat, Fargo flat, Kansas City, Missouri though with a SmackDown was way up. Providence, Rhode Island with its Raw was way up from last time it did a Raw in Providence. New York, that means Madison Square Garden, which is different from Brooklyn. New York, the house show that they did on the 12th. Was over 11,000, which is up from the Q1 house show of last year, which had just under 9,000. Youngstown, Ohio is up. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania with a SmackDown on March 10th was up from the one that they did in December. Boston, Massachusetts, John Cena came in there and sold out the TD Garden, as we know. Trenton, New Jersey was way up for a house show. Kitchener was up for a house show. Toronto was slightly down for a house show. Syracuse was way up for a house show. Washington, D.C. did over 13,000 tickets out for SmackDown, which is better than the last two Raws they did by a wide margin. Grand Rapids, Michigan was up for a Raw compared to the SmackDown they did there previously in May. In enemy territory in Rockford, Illinois, house show was up. Champaign, Illinois, the house show was up. Evansville, Indiana, the SmackDown was up from the Raw and the SmackDown that they did there last, and the Ottawa Raw, there isn't a great comparison for. But most of these are up. And I did put Cody Rhodes logos next to the events that had the house shows that had Cody Rhodes. So the Milwaukee one that he was on is flat. But with that exception, the other 1, 2, 3, 4 house shows that we have here on the board are up. Is it because of Cody Rhodes? Toronto, I don't know.
Well, I was going to say the Toronto house show that's down. The comparison point is one of the house shows from the holiday tour right around Christmas and New Year's that is always like the best drawing house show tour of the year for WWE. So I think in that regard, it kind of makes sense for them to be down, even though it is WrestleMania season.
We do have because that's the Toronto house show March 27, 2022 that did slightly better also, 7,700.
But yeah, I mean, so are these are all comparison points from the last like Raw or SmackDown that took place there? Like if it's a Raw, it's
same event, TV so yes, same market, same event.
Okay.
So even if it's a Raw, I'm not comparing the Raw to the SmackDown. It's only Raw to Raw, SmackDown to SmackDown, house show to house show.
Okay. Yeah. And you would say that who right now from like, if we're just talking from like a star power perspective, like obviously having like John Cena for the SmackDown show is good, but or for the Raw in Boston, but they're pretty much firing on all cylinders when it comes to talent being available. I guess you could say Randy Orton not being around is key, but the fact that they've gotten Cody back, and they obviously have Sami Zayn working on the house shows. Seth Rollins is there. You know, Roman's not there that much, but
the one house show that Roman Reigns did work, which was his first house show since September, was this Toronto house show where they did Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns in the main event.
So do you take anything from that being down?
I can't. There isn't a story here where I can say, "Wow, they did this big match in the main event, and they popped it versus what they did there last time." I at least can't say that. I can't say that there's a positive story here.
Right, and if I remember recall correctly, they added that pretty late in the process. Like it was like a few days before I think they announced Reigns being on the show like a couple weeks before, and then they announced that he was going to be wrestling Sami Zayn. I believe it was for the title, probably, right?
I think so, yes, yeah.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I think most people would understand what a house show is and that be unlikely for Sami Zayn to win the title.
Okay. So does this tell us anything, or can we look at any other data further to discern whether WWE is making the right call or the wrong call as far as not putting the title on Sami Zayn or not doing Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns in the main event of WrestleMania? And for something else to look at, we look at Google Trends, and Cody Rhodes is slightly ahead over the last 9 months or so. But Sami Zayn's peak for around Elimination Chamber is higher than the Cody peak on this time course, which is around Royal Rumble for him. I imagine we'll see a big peak for Cody, especially if he wins the title at WrestleMania. But we can look to quarter hours too, where this doesn't tell us something to differentiate the two, but the Cody Rhodes live promo and angle with Sami Zayn did pop the quarter for last week's SmackDown. So not this past Friday SmackDown, but the March 10th SmackDown. The demo grew 10% quarter to quarter, and both total viewership and the demo peaked for this closing segment from a week ago, where there's a live promo and angle between the Usos and Cody Rhodes and Sami Zayn.
I think the primary concern I would have with not putting the title on Sami Zayn is not necessarily around like, oh, is Cody as big of a draw as Sami Zayn? but also the idea that you have this guy in Sami Zayn who's gotten really over, who's shown to have a real positive impact on business. The concern I would have would be by having him not win the title that you're going to cool him off as opposed to his, like, how he contrasts with Cody. And I think he's not cold yet. Like, it's not like, I don't know if he's as hot as he was like going into Elimination Chamber, because that was pretty damn hot, but I don't get the sense that people have lost interest in him yet. I'm a little bit concerned about where he's going to be in 6 months, but as of now, it doesn't seem to have like a massive negative impact on Sami Zayn's ability to draw an audience right now.
Yeah. And then from this past Monday's Raw, the quarter hour is showing that the peak quarter hour for Raw this past Monday, March 13th, was the Cody Rhodes live promo. And there's also part of this, which would be a smaller part of this quarter, had the Seth Rollins, Baron Corbin, and The Miz backstage angle, plus an ad break. So we have, you know, we have an ad break to say that this wasn't a quarter with no ad breaks, and Cody Rhodes' live promo being the longest piece of this 15-minute segment. Increased the audience 10%, increased the demo 17%. It was the high point, the high quarter of the show. So I have to think that, you know, we've seen a preponderance now of examples where Cody has increased the viewership or been the highest quarter or been the highest growth quarter. And we do have almost in Brock Lesnar popping the demo 10% as well, but not as much as Cody popped the demo.
And they'd love to use Cody at the top of the hour. That's something that they've really used a lot lately. And you can see why with the positive growth you see at the 9 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's that. And then I have some data for W Shop, where I've been collecting the W Shop top. Well, I've been collecting everything, all like there's like 1,000 positions. But anyway, if we just isolate the top 10 every day since roughly September, when I started tracking this, the leading appearer in the top 10 is Roman Reigns, followed by Bray Wyatt, followed by John Cena across that entire time. But if you look at more recent time, and Cody doesn't appear at all in September and October while he's out, but he is now number one and number two in February and in March year to date. And Sami Zayn was number two in February in the month that Elimination Chamber happened. So Cody, I would say, is becoming a stronger merchandise seller, if this data is meaningful and a good impression of merchandise sales.
And now, obviously, he came back in the Royal Rumble. I haven't been following this at all. I'm assuming he has new merchandise that maybe came out when he returned.
Cody?
Yeah.
I would suspect so, yes.
Right. And I think that would help, obviously. He comes back. He's got a new shirt. He's got new whatever you want to buy from him. That probably makes an impact. I'm imagining a new Stone Cold merchandise drop in March.
Stone Cold is never not a merch draw. Stone Cold is always, because like, he's ranked here across all months here.
So right, ranked high, but he's weirdly, he jumps up to being number one in March.
Yeah, I would imagine there's like a three, maybe there was a 316 deal. But yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it's
wow,
it's,
that's enough to swing. That's enough to propel him to number one. Like it's March 16th.
I don't know, and it's March year to date. So
yeah,
we're not totally through the month. Maybe once we have some more non 316 time to mix in here, maybe he'll diminish below number one. But it's just a stunt. And NWO is another one that appears up here. I think if we pulled this list down further, you'd find The Rock pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that kind of like. Like NWO and Austin stuff is kind of like almost like 90s culture is becoming much bigger. We had a 90s convention in Boston this weekend. Like just people reliving the 90s. And I do think like getting like some retro stuff like NWO stuff, I think that holds more appeal now than it did maybe like 10 years ago, or it wasn't quite retro yet.
Okay. Here's the Cody merch. If you want to get some Cody American Nightmare glassware, American Nightmare stainless steel water bottle. You can just house your entire kitchen with American Nightmare branding if you want. I don't see anything that looks that new, but who knows?
Does Sami Zayn have this level of merchandise available? Can I get a Sami Zayn like glassware? Can I get Sami Zayn shorts? I get Sami Zayn socks?
You can get Sami Zayn's. You can get Cody Rhodes Nightmare Socks. I'm trying to click on Sami Zayn. What's happening here? Is Sami Zayn merchandised to the same degree as Cody? Where is he here? Okay. We'll just navigate. You can get the Bloodline Red Hat.
Okay, but that's not Sami Zayn. Now, how are they calculating that? Does all the Bloodline stuff go to Roman Reigns? Does it go to all the members of the Bloodline? Does Solo Sikoa get part of it?
The way that I'm doing it, I'm giving Roman Reigns credit for all the Bloodline stuff, I think, how I'm doing it.
But can I get my Sami Zayn merch?
What is this? What is this logo here? The Bloodline.
I assume it's the Bloodline.
The Bloodline. Reigns versus Zayn.
So that's maybe counts as Sami Zayn.
We have a Sami Zayn shirt.
Right.
We have Island of Relevancy. Sami Zayn, honorary Oos. That is,
that's obviously his.
If it's got Sami Zayn's name in it, it's going to Sami Zayn.
Okay.
We've got more Bloodline
imagine
stuff.
Imagine seeing someone in public and they've got a shirt that says Feeling Oosie on that. If I was walking down the street and I saw someone wearing a Feeling Oosie shirt, I'd turn around and walk the other way.
Is this a Sami's? No, this is Acknowledge the Bloodline sweater. Feeling Oosie, the Bloodline. Yeah, it's
wow. The point I'm raising here is
Bloodline socks you can get.
It's kind of remarkable that Sami's as good as high as he is in merchandise. Like Cody is number one, but Cody's got a lot more stuff you can get.
You get Sami Zayn replica side plates for the world title that he'll never win.
But but when we talk about merch sales, part of that
only
is
only like $99 for those, by the way.
Sami doesn't have nearly. It doesn't seem like he has nearly the volume of items.
And if he had more, like he would be selling more. Or is it that he's only selling to a certain degree, so they're not producing all this additional merchandise items for him?
I think historically, we know how they've operated: is they pick who they think are the biggest stars, and then they merchandise those people. Everyone knows the famous Mick Foley, Mark Henry story.
Which is
Steve
what?
Austin. That Mick Foley was approached by like a merchandise guy in like 1996. And they were saying, here's all the merchandise we've got for you. Like, you're going to have a shirt. You're going to have an action figure. And Foley saw the list and he saw like who they also had penciled in as like, you're going to have all this stuff. And they had Mark Henry, who had like just debuted. Like, he signed up for everything. He's going to have a shirt. He's going to have an action figure. He's going to have a hat. He's going to have, like, all this stuff. And Foley said, hey, why don't you have stuff for Steve Austin? I think he could sell a lot of this stuff. And then they were like, it's Mark Henry's going to get all this stuff, not Steve Austin. And so, obviously, that was a long time ago. But I would also wager that the same people making the decisions are still around. So I think part of this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? It seems weird to me that Sami Zayn, we know for a fact in February, right? Was he number one in February?
Yes.
So we know he was the number one merch seller in February.
Number two.
Oh, Cody was number one. Okay. So he was number two in February. And we know he was fourth in December. He was fifth in March. So he's like been a top five merch seller since he kind of really took off with this Bloodline thing. So it'd be hard to say that he's not a merch seller and that he's probably worth a bigger investment. I mean, he's outsold Roman Reigns in merchandise in every month of 2023 so far. And Reigns, especially if he gets the Bloodline stuff, has a lot more merchandise than Sami Zayn. So I think it would be logical to say that Sami Zayn has the most merchandise, I guess. He should have more merchandise because it seems like he's capable of selling the merchandise that he does have. And part of it is like, I bet you that honorary Oos shirt, even though I just made fun of it, like I'm sure that is a huge seller. And I think part of this is you hit on like a good shirt and you sell a lot of it, as opposed to that's a huge, like in like things like the graphic design element of it matter a lot, as opposed to just someone being really popular. You also have to have the right merch to sell that. Like,
and probably the angle that they introduced it with, you know.
Right, and like the NWO merchandise, like the NWO shirt is kind of like an iconic shirt at this point. And it was as soon as it came out. You could say the same thing as the Austin 316 shirt. I'm sure those shirts are making up a bulk of what have placed Steve Austin and the NWO as high as they have been, despite the fact that they're not contemporary acts. And Like, I don't, like, I'm trying to think of, like, I guess Cody Rhodes has, like, the American Nightmare shirt, but, like, it's not, like, I guess, like, it seems like Sammy's shirt is more over and better than Cody's shirt, even if Sammy is not necessarily pushed as hard as Cody.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to tell you what are the Sami Zayn items that have, you know, been recognized in this table. There is a Sami Zayn duct tape shirt. Yeah, it's a Sami Zayn duct tape shirt, honorary Oos t-shirt, and that's it. It's those two items.
Those are where are making up for.
That, those are the things that are appearing two. In the top 10.
Yeah. And obviously, like Bray Wyatt, obviously, like his whole calling card is that he sells a lot of merchandise.
Yes. And for Steve Austin, what is appearing for Steve Austin? I'm just curious. The retro what shirt? Thank God we're still buying what shirts in 2023. Austin 316, a Navy New York Yankees 316 shirt, Pittsburgh Pirates 316 shirt, Baltimore Orioles, Texas Rangers, Red Sox, Diamondbacks, Philadelphia Phillies, Mariners, Dodgers, Nationals, Tigers.
So there's
Cincinnati Reds. So apparently they're licensing. I'm sure that's part of the benefit of being on Fanatics or something, is that
they're
licensing MLB shirts for people.
With stuff the casual fans remember, like a catchphrase from 25 years ago.
Yes, we have Steve Austin Contenders sweatpants, full zip hoodie. I don't know, we could go on and on here. There's a few more, but okay. There's a lot of Steve Austin merch. It's amazing.
Next episode, we're going to be wearing some WWE merch, all of us.
Mm. And we'll have to put that through the WrestleMomics Ethics Committee first for consideration. But that's merch. I do have, we won't show it today, but I do have some of this information for PWT's AEW shop too. And the acclaim for this, at least this time period, is just blowing everyone away. We have an acclaimed funny spot in a second here too. We'll just jump to it now. Why not? The acclaimed have Max Caster and Anthony Bowens have registered for the trademark Scissor Fest. I don't think this is breaking news, but I did find this in the USPTO office, because we're going to talk about a different trademark in a second. But this is a trademark that they're taking out for goods and services, including meet and greets, wrestling exhibitions, wrestling contests. So maybe they're thinking about doing a meet and greet called called Scissor Fest. We'll see. But also, there's
thinking a trademark about what they're going to be doing.
Say it again.
I was going to say, I think they're thinking about what they might be doing in 20 years, Bowens and Caster, and that they might understand that they've hit on something that people will remember. And when you're doing the autograph circuit after you retire, having your stuff trademarked is probably important. And there's probably somebody who's very close to the acclaimed act who can speak from experience that having memorable catchphrases is probably important to have. And having content trademarked around that stuff is probably important.
Yes. And I'm almost positive Billy Gunn has done trademarks with Mike Dawkins as well, who's the trademark lawyer who many of these people are working with. AEW Collision is another trademark that was taken out, was filed on February 20th for goods and services, including educational and entertainment services, namely a continuing program about wrestling accessible by radio. Looking forward to listening to it on radio. Television, satellite, audio, video, computer networks. These are sort of general statements that are used in a lot of different trademarks. But anyway, that sounds like it could be a TV show, AEW Collision. And Andrew Zarian, I believe, reported on Wrestling Observer Live that he's hearing that there may be a third AEW weekly in-ring TV show on Turner Networks. So if there was going to be a Saturday show, and if it was going to be on TNT or TBS, I think it's more likely that it would be on TNT, just based on what TBS is able to deliver. If we look at what their schedules were showing for this past weekend, or for TNT, I picked the week ahead because there's basketball, college, there's more college basketball this weekend on TNT, but there's movies at 6:15. They were playing, replaying Thor, and on TBS they're playing. I don't think I could even find a TBS Saturday lineup in this week or the next week that didn't have NCAA basketball on it. But I think they're just replaying, movies at that time too. And if we look at what TBS is able to deliver for ratings on Saturday at 6 p.m. or so. So I've encompassed everything from 5:30 to 7:30. And this year, it looks like, you know, they've just been playing movies as far as the things. This is only the things that actually make the top 200. So this is the examples that we have here, which are in 2023, are only a few, only three out of what's got to be something like 10 weeks or so, or about 10 weeks, something like that, into maybe 11 weeks into 2023. And they deliver a 0.13, a 0.14, a 0.15. So something in that neighborhood, and that would be on the high end. You know, 0.13 to 0.15 on TBS compared to what TNT is able to deliver. Its reruns for movies have been, you know, we have no examples in 2023. The latest example that we have is July 2022, where it did manage to do a 0.15. So I'd imagine that this time slot on TNT is doing a lot less than 0.15. So the conclusion that I would make there is that the ratings are weaker on TNT in the time slot that people are speculating may be filled by a third AEW program. So that then we do have some originals to look at here on both TBS and TNT. And we have something called the All-Star Battle. I don't know what that is, but that did a 0.12 in February on TNT, starting at 6:30. We have Black History Marathon Creed 2 that did a 0.11 on TBS, starting at 6:45. And the USA Soccer pregame show did 0.09, starting at 7 in January. So I guess if I'm guessing which network this might appear on, TNT looks to be the network that could use the help more.
If we're looking at the movies and their rating, isn't that kind of difficult because the movies are extremely long when they're on cable? And at AEW Collision, we're probably looking at best, a two-hour show, but probably more likely a one-hour show. Mm-hmm. So like a 0.15 for a three-hour, three-and-a-half-hour movie on TBS. I think that rating would be probably better, perhaps, if it was only 1 hour. So if they do shift to 1 hour of original programming.
I mean, I don't know. The movies that go into later towards prime time, maybe they're doing, maybe that's a better time slot. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's why I kind of grabbed all of this time range, even going back like to 5:30 to say, you know, well, if it starts at 5:30, it's ending like 3 hours later, to get some general idea of what this time slot could possibly do.
Just real quick too, that some All-Star Battle, that was a one-off part of NBA All-Star Weekend where it was like a competition between Bebe Rexha and Wiz Khalifa doing music. So it was just a one-off. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And to think about like what could a third AEW program do in terms of a rating? Well, Rampage of late is doing anywhere between a 0.10. This Friday preemption did do a 0.07 at 7 o'clock. But other than that, in its normal time slot at 10 o'clock, it's doing a 0.10 and as high as a 0.15 in, you know, since the end of last year. So could a third AEW show deliver something in the neighborhood of what a movie does, which is appearing to do, I don't know, 0.15, 0.13? And remember, this is the high end, so it's probably on the average doing lower than this. And then TNT, which I said is the one that I think is the area that needs more help. Nothing made the top 200 year to date for 2023. So it's doing something under what we see as the lowest number here, a 0.15. So could it do a 0.12 or something like that? I'm sure for the first episode.
I have no idea what Collision is. So it's hard for me to say, like, is it going to be a live show? Is it going to be taped? Is it going to be in-ring? Is it going to be clips? Is it going to be highlights? Is it going to be video packages? Is it going to be just best of AEW content? Is it going to show like old pay-per-view matches? It's hard for me to tell, like, predict what it's going to do. I don't know. Do you think 6 o'clock on a Saturday is a better time slot than 10 o'clock on a Friday? I personally am more likely to watch it live at 6 o'clock on Friday than 10 o'clock on Friday. I'm much more likely to be home at that time frame. It's a time frame that people are kind of used to watching sports at.
I'm sure there's a definitive answer to that in terms of like how many people are watching at 6 on Saturday versus 10 mm-hmm. on Friday. It's not obvious to me what the answer is, but I'm sure there's obviously an answer.
Right. Like with the movie reruns, like TBS and TNT, they seem to just be showing the same movie over and over and over again for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a rotation of 6 to 8 movies that they show. That almost seems like each showing of the movie is like its rating would be entirely related to competition and how many people are watching TV at the time, as opposed to one movie being bigger than another movie. If it's showing Shazam every week at the same time slot, then we're really talking about solely its rating fluctuation. It seems to be totally related to what competition, how many people are watching TV.
And just from the network's perspective, it's not costing the network very much. And these are all movies that WBD owns.
Yeah, especially Shazam, I know is.
Well, yeah, I mean Shazam is, but like Thor Ragnarok certainly isn't. So some of it is definitely licensed content. I don't know how much it costs to get a movie to show on your network.
Supposedly very cheap, I guess. Like that's a lot of networks go to that because it's cheap programming than syndicated.
And I wonder, like with syndicated TV, both when we talk about what is TBS and TNT, what are they showing that's not AEW and not live sports? It's pretty much all syndicated television or it's movies. And maybe in the long term, one would assume that stuff does not have the same viability as people become more and more when it comes to watching that kind of stuff. People have shifted a lot to streaming. That trend would probably only continue. So having more live programming in the long run is valuable, even if it maybe doesn't match the rating you were getting from a syndicated thing right away.
I have questions about this, though. Like, first off, like they're getting if they get another hour or so of AEW TV and they could not get Ring of Honor on a Warner network, that's really interesting on a Turner network. But also, too, like, are they producing too much content on a weekly basis now? Like, and then that's a question to be asked too.
If you're a content creator and your job is to review AEW shows and to follow them and recap them, I'm sure you're pulling your hair out at another one. I don't know. I don't think more content is a negative in the sense that I don't know if burnout is a real factor. Like, are fans going to become so exhausted with feeling like they have to keep up with Dynamite and Rampage and now Collision that they will just be like, you know what, I can't commit to AEW anymore. I'm done. Yeah, probably not. As opposed to people like the way they've watched Rampage, which is some people watch Rampage and some people don't. And will they skip that? To me, I don't know. I don't watch Rampage every week, so I'm probably not going to watch Collision every week either. I think that maybe – I also think it's beneficial to get your products in a different time slot to maybe get some different people watching your show. It's now Rampage is not like a super accessible show to watch live because of its time slot. I would say that this show is more likely to be like that, is to be more accessible. So maybe you find different people that haven't had time to watch AEW yet, and then they start watching Collision, especially if it's like a clip show or a recap show. My least favorite thing about AEW Collision definitively is going to be the ratings discourse around it.
I wonder if AEW is getting set up into a situation where when they renew and negotiate renewing rights, they're going to be, you know, WBD will be able to say, you know, when we started this deal, we were giving you 2 hours and now we're giving you 4 weekly hours, not including all access, which maybe they continue to do seasons of. And so we'll pay you, commensurate with the doubling of hours that we've given you, but we're not going to pay you commensurate. You know, we're not going to increase your rate per hour for the TV rights that we're going to pay you.
But do we know Collision is going to be a weekly show? That's another fact. Collision could be like All Access, mm-hmm. where it has a limited run. We don't know anything about it. I think Zarian kind of hinted at, I think, it being like similar to like a Rampage, but we don't know. So
it does add up with comments that Tony made at the last mm-hmm. press conference, where he said something to the effect that I think there's opportunity for more AEW content on WBD networks.
I find the approach to this being a negative, like the general disposition people seem to approach this topic as being a negative for AEW, very concerning. Like, it seems like all the discourse around AEW getting a third show, which would seem to just be an affirmation that Warner Brothers Discovery is very invested in AEW. But it seems like everyone's entire discussion about it is, it's going to be too much. They've got too much wrestling now. Tony's going to be overworked. You know, people are going to get burned out because there's too much of it. How are they going to do well in the ratings? Like, this is like great news if you're an AEW fan, and it's a sign of strength for AEW as a company. And I find the entire discussion being centered around how this is bad for AEW, like, kind of alarming in like just what it says about the culture around how people discuss AEW.
I think it's on one hand, it's definitely WBD wouldn't be putting more hours of AEW on their networks if they were feeling like they're not going to renew or not bid aggressively for AEW in the next round.
They clearly value AEW programming on their network.
Mm-hmm.
And as Gullo pointed out, it's strange that Ring of Honor couldn't get that hour, because mm-hmm. that would kind of be the best of both worlds. You get more wrestling, but it's not necessarily like AEW, so people don't feel like they have to watch all, so maybe you don't have the same kind of potential burnout concerns. But I think what this tells us is that Warner Bros. Discovery values the AEW brand's name. They don't just mm-hmm. want wrestling. They just don't mm-hmm. want – they don't want Ring of Honor wrestling. Even if it features a lot of the AEW stars, they want – you know, they want AEW All Elite Wrestling Collision mm-hmm. on their show. I think that says something about the AEW brand name value at this point to Warner Brothers Discovery.
Yeah. Okay. And I think we're down to one more topic that I have prepared anyway. And that's, we just have an update on MLW viewership, which did over the last 2 weeks. These are two new weeks to report here that haven't been reported yet. March 7th, first run did 47,000 viewers. Second run did 53,000 viewers. So there was a replay that did another 21 and another 8,000 viewers. So that totals to 68,000, 61,000. So this is we're kind of getting an idea of what the average is for MLW Underground on Reels, which may or may not be a 10-week deal. We are now 6 weeks into what may or may not be a 10-week deal. And it's doing, at least in the first run, and by the way, Impact and New Japan also have a replay that I just don't know the data for. So we can, if we're going to think about it in comparison to Impact or New Japan, which New Japan has the same time slot, the same time on Thursday, it's right to think about it in terms of the first run only in comparison to New Japan or Impact. But anyway, about 50,000 viewers is what it's done over the last 3 weeks. And it did do more than that in the 3 weeks before that. It did somewhere between 73,000 and 97,000. So that's where MLW is. And anything else to add before we go to any super chats? If there are
yeah.
any? I have a question.
Oh, a prepared Sorry. Question?
I have a discussion point that hopefully will not take up an enormous amount of time, but I wanted to.
Well, we have plenty of time, so that's fine.
I don't want to get into the what constitutes a dream match discourse directly, because I think that's dumb. But I want to talk about Tony Khan's role as a promoter. And Tony Khan is very active in promoting AEW. Both on social media and in regular media forums and doing interviews and things like that. And I wanted to ask you guys, like, what do you think Tony Khan's responsibility is to be like, I don't want to say truthful, but like realistic in how he promotes his shows? Because on one hand, Tony is a promoter and he is advertising his show. And he is inherently going to exaggerate the anticipation for some things that are happening on AEW. He is going to try to make everything seem as big and as possible and as must see as you can. But on the other hand, there seems to be a level of standard that people expect for him to be, like, I guess, like, honest and realistic with expectations. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. Like, you can say, like, we can talk about, like, he mentioned that Vikingo versus Kenny Omega is a dream match, which it is to some people. And there's, like, all this discourse around, like, is it a, no, I don't even want to talk about the dream match stuff. I don't want to bring it up because it's a dumb talking point. So scrap that. I almost fell into the trap, but we shouldn't be talking about the dream match discourse because it's led by people that don't know what they're talking about. And that's one of the problems with AEW discourse is it sucks.
It could be a dream match if there were a video package involved.
We all get sucked into this thing that is shouldn't be a real talking point. But like Tony Khan in general is very active in the promotion of AEW, and like he's a promoter. He's going to be hyping things up and making things seem as exciting as possible. Tony Khan's Twitter account is going to be conducted kind of like the same way like WWE's official Twitter account is going to be when it comes to talking about, you're not going to want to miss SmackDown tonight. You know, Sami Zayn takes on Solo Sikoa, like in one of the most anticipated matchups of the year. Like it's as a fan, you should kind of take it at face value that obviously this is the person trying to sell you something. So they're going to hype it up more. But I feel like Tony, because he's, I don't know, it's because he's an actual person and he's not just a brand. He's held to kind of a certain standard of like, Tony's got to be really honest and straight with the fans. Otherwise, they won't trust him. And I think there's a fine line you need to have when you're in that kind of position where you're a promoter and you're going to always exaggerate the quality of your own show because that's the business. But at the same time, you also have to avoid under delivering on what you're promoting. And I think AEW for the most part has lived up to the expectations that are set by Tony, but I think it's an interesting, it's an interesting aspect of the business that I kind of noticed more this week in the sense that you have to find that balance. And how important do you think it is does Tony have a responsibility to be truthful and honest with the excitement around his product as a more like non-associated entity?
Would you say that because he's so truthful and honest about other things and he's forefront of information that people want in all? And I bring it up because I was going to bring something up after this point. We could blend it in is the whole exchange him and Meltzer had on Friday about the cost that is covered for AEW talent.
With Dave's hacked account.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah. So, So, and Tony, Tony corrected and came out and said, no, we cover everything.
You know, he was saving that in the drafts for 6 days. Like, I'm gonna tweet this on Friday.
But yeah, I saw that and I'm like, well, Tony's very forefront with information, different than what we get like from WWE. So maybe people, they hold him to a different standard for sure. You're right on with that, Jesse. They want him to be honest.
I think he's cultivated that image for himself, which is like, we're not going to be the carny fake wrestling promotion that's going to lie about attendance and is going to be emailing the city of San Antonio department to make sure that there's not actually 1,200 people working and not 750 people working. So we can lie about the attendance being higher than it really is. Like, he's cultivated this image of like integrity in a way that maybe WWE hasn't. And part of that is because people are so dismissive of WWE being like this carny company that they are inherently more critical about Tony's maybe under-delivering than WWE, where everyone just accepts it because it's WWE and that's what they've done.
I think in AEW's case, it's about Tony. And there isn't – Paul Levesque isn't going on Twitter and personally promoting these things in the way that, I mean, he's tweeting things also and retweeting things, but he's not making it a personal thing. I think for Tony especially, this is AEW is about him proving himself as a business executive who's not just the son of a billionaire. I suspect that is very much influencing his actions.
and Tony is kind of large, in a lot of ways, like Tony himself is the largest promotional wing of AEW as a company. Tony Khan does way more media than Triple H does. He does way more, you know, podcasts and radio show appearances. He does a lot of interviews in print as well. Like Tony himself is the personal spokesperson for AEW. Triple H does a little bit of that, and he's done more of it, I think, lately. But
and Tony Triple H doesn't reply to people on Twitter and quote tweet them and interact with
Dave. It's a different – Tony has a much more personal, hands-on promotional aspect to him the way that Triple H or certainly Vince had. It was all – in WWE, it's the company. In Tony Khan – in AEW, it's Tony Khan in a lot of ways.
His personal brand is very much associated with All Elite Wrestling in a way that not even Vince – I would say Vince's brand is associated with WWE.
Yeah. And I think that's important to kind of keep in mind. And I think it's very interesting because Tony has always said like he doesn't want to be an on-screen character. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be Vince McMahon coming out to No Chance in Hell and being the evil authority figure. He's very adamant about that. And I'm thankful for that because the last thing wrestling needs is another heel authority figure. But at the same time, Tony has become a character for AEW and has become a very prominent figure to the fan base in a lot of ways. So even though he's not an on-screen character, his personality and his decisions and his image have a massive impact on AEW as a company and the perception of AEW as a company.
I think in terms of like, The question that you're asking is like, I think you're asking is he overhyping stuff and does that matter? Right.
Right. If Tony overhypes something and it doesn't deliver, does that damage his credibility to people? And because he's such a key promotional figure within AEW, does that inherently damage AEW?
To a degree, I say yes.
There's something about the personal approach that Tony has in regards to promotion that makes under-delivering a bigger problem than WWE just being like WWE's, you know, corporate brand under-delivering. It's almost like WWE gets away with, like, I think a lot of stuff because like – it's presented as in some ways as a faceless entity that makes these decisions and makes these negative things that happen. It's the company, or it's the faceless brand of writers, or it's the person backstage, like in a way that like Tony Khan bears every single ounce of responsibility within AEW, no matter what they do, in kind of a way that WWE doesn't, because WWE's brand takes a bulk of a lot of criticism as opposed to an individual. Obviously, Vince has taken a lot of criticism. Triple H has taken less so, but still will get criticized for certain things. But Tony is really like everything. Oh, the house shows were bad or aren't doing as well as we wanted, or there might be a bad idea. That's on Tony. Oh, these people, you know, got in a fight backstage and it blew up. Oh, that's on Tony. Oh, this creative decision didn't work out that well. Oh, that's on Tony. Oh, this match came apart. Oh, that's on Tony. Everything that AEW does comes back to Tony in a way that everything that WWE does doesn't go back to a central figure, even though it really should have with Vince. It seemed like a lot of the criticism would be levied at just WWE as entity, or like WWE blew it, or WWE didn't do this, as opposed to it's much more personal
with
Tony.
Is it has anything to do with the fact that Tony has put it out there that he is the booker and writer of all these shows? There is no committee, there is no staff of writers, it's him. So that's he almost magnifies that.
Yes, and realistically, Tony is the owner, and Tony is responsible for all of the things that happen at AEW. So it's not even I don't even think it's like misplaced criticism. But it's much more public in a way that I think doesn't exist at WWE. And I think your point, Gullo, is spot on in the sense that, yeah, like it's Tony doesn't have a booker. Tony doesn't have like a figurehead president or someone like that to take decisions. It's presented as him making all these decisions. So that's where people turn to.
I think this matters to my eye, and I don't think everybody definitely doesn't see it this way, but I think other people do see it this way to an extent, and maybe that trickles down into affecting the audience overall, and that he uses the word I a lot when he's talking about AEW. So he's not talking about the company did this or AEW is doing that. I did this. I did that. And I think there's this, and like I said earlier, I think there's a desire from him to want to show everyone that this is his thing, that he is the booker, that he is the promoter, that he is the one doing things. And I think that makes him a more divisive figure because of that. And in terms of him over hyping things, I mean, I don't accept that wrestling promoters need to exaggerate and hype things. I think that if at least personally, and from my point of view as a viewer, an audience member, I think you earn a lot more trust by under promising and over delivering, so that it's really easy for me to believe you if you're not trying to oversell, or if you don't sell me more than you can actually deliver. And I think there's a number of ways, and everything from his promoting of events to what he's talked about in terms of business, where I have to say, okay, I got to run this through the Tony Khan filter and say, well, he's overhyping this.
Mm-hmm. But isn't there just being a consumer of product, being someone who has seen thousands and thousands of advertisements in their career, in their lives, which everyone listening to this podcast has, don't you just approach it don't you understand that this person has a direct financial tie in making this product seem as good as possible? To me, it doesn't really register. Like, I totally understand what you're saying from a promoters should really be, it'd be better off if promoters were very honest. And so people trusted what they had to say. So when they did say something is big, fans really felt like it was going to be big because they have that trust and they've earned it. But at the same time, like if Tony tweets out, this is going to be a huge episode of Dynamite.
Every episode I'm just is like, huge. He says that every week.
Right.
So what is it? Right. What is it? Has no meaning. It has no differentiation.
Right. But he's just an advertisement for the show. Like, that's what he should be doing. Like, he should, like, I don't think
to me, as a reader of those words, if you say that every week, you're saying nothing then.
Right. Right. So he should, you're of the belief that he should be a little bit more judicious in how he doles out the anticipation.
I think AEW would be benefited a great deal if AEW is less about Tony and more about the brand in general.
Right. No, I think that's a fair point.
Yeah. And that's like, I guess when I'm doing stuff for WrestleNomics here, I try to be really conscious about like overhyping, especially when we're talking about information. Like, our business is relaying information and analysis to people, and maybe our credibility matters a lot more than a wrestling company's does. So I try to like not overhype stuff and to not overpromise things. And if anything, sometimes I know I'm going to be able to report something by a certain date, and I will tell people it may happen sometime after that, even though I'm pretty confident I'm going to be able to do it days earlier than that, so that at least, you know, I'm under promising and over delivering, hopefully.
You're not gonna tweet out, we've got huge news coming later
today. Huge news. Yeah. Big update.
Yeah. Breaking news.
Gold tells me to do that all the time offline, and I'm like, I don't know. Are you sure? Yeah. Do you have anything else? A bit more? Because we have time here.
I mean, we have a super chat question. We do have that. So we'll ask this here. Louis Ducati goes, first off, Jesse's pod was great this week. Giving you a little credit there, Jesse. And then he goes, what's the percentage of Punk coming back?
Well, thank you for the compliments.
You got a new graphic, too. Why don't you plug it now?
Podcast.
Is this Teddy Roosevelt?
Sure. I was gonna do that, Brandon. I was gonna plug it. I didn't need you coaching me from behind to tell me to do that. But so we have a new logo that was designed by Jeremy Sexton. Who did a great job. He spent a long time working on it. It looks great. I'm really proud of the work that he's done for it. It's not Teddy Roosevelt. It's loosely based off of like the New Yorker cartoon character, who like is based off of like basically like a Gilded Age well-to-do gentleman, I guess. But the episode he's talking about was I had Trevor Dame on, and we talked about kind of like 7 months removed from CM Punk's presser and backstage fight after All Out, and kind of discuss like what kind of impact that's had on AEW. How has it, impacted the perception of AEW as a company. Obviously, as we've discussed most weeks here, you know, a lot of the business metrics since CM Punk's exit from AEW have been down. And so obviously that played a role in it. And then we also talked about whether or not he's going to come back and what are some scenarios in play that would mean for him to come back to AEW. If I were to put a percentage chance on it, I'm going to say 50%. I think there's a lot of logical reasons why he should come back to AEW and they should be willing to work with each other. But CM Punk is also somebody that walked out of WWE and spent almost 10 years not wrestling. So I can't put it any higher than 50%, but yeah, I would say that's
what I started right to write on my post-it note here right before you said 50%, 49%. So yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think it's 50-50.
It's tough to say because you could see him having a more occasional and distant role in that in terms of, you know, there not being more problems in the locker room, like apparently there were at least on one occasion when he was there. Just maybe having him there less would help with that.
I think there is a really good point that Trevor made, which was that if he doesn't come back and if they never were, he never like works an on-screen program with the Elite, this will become like kind of like their version of Montreal, where like Bret Hart gets asked about Montreal every day of his life since it happened. Yeah. And this will always be something that kind of hangs over CM Punk and the Elite for the rest of their lives or the rest of their public careers.
Definitely for Punk, he doesn't have more matches somewhere.
I mean, I said it's like I don't know what Punk's psyche really is, and he maybe doesn't care at all about this, but if I was CM Punk, I would be sitting at home recovering from my injury, and I would be thinking, like, man, is this really how I want to go out again? Do I want my career to be my last, you know, moment in my career to be this?
And
I would say no.
Well, I was just saying, and to add that, Jesse, there is that big six-man tag match that is on the table, and I think like
you turn it into an angle, and then all of that stuff. Then Trevor made this point, like you turn that into an angle, and all of that stuff, the press conference and the fight, all of that just becomes pro wrestling. You know, nonsense. It's not to be taken nearly as seriously. The same way like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart's backstage fight kind of ended up becoming part of pro wrestling lore, but like, you turn into an angle and people will, and I'm sure that like a big six man tag or a big singles match versus Kenny, I'm sure that would do excellent business for AEW. And then you would have taken this black mark on your careers and turned it into a real highlight in a hot program and, you know, 200,000 pay-per-view buys or whatever you would do with it.
Yeah. I think like if you had his first match back being on pay-per-view and it's something surrounding the Elite, something surrounding the Bucks and Kenny, I think that would do a really strong pay-per-view sales.
And it would also help like the perception of AEW as like, you know, I think the perception of AEW took a big hit with Punk leaving because it was just a huge showcase of, you know, Tony Khan not having the kind of command over the locker room that he probably needed to have, not having control over the company, you know, wrestlers taking shots at one another, unprofessionalism, that kind of aspect, all things that were real negative perceptions for AEW that can all be kind of rectified if you can get all these people to work together, to get on the same page and to deliver a program and a match that fans really want to see. It would totally change, I think, the perception hit that AEW took since Punk's exit, by showing that we can all work together and we can be professionals and we can deliver and do something that the fans are really going to get excited about, as opposed to what has been since that happened, which is disappointment because CM Punk was a big star and he's no longer really doing anything with AEW.
And that I would say is less likely than 50% that those parties will work together, that they will trust each other enough to have a pro wrestling match and pro wrestling angles with each other.
And that's the other thing is like, say Punk comes back, but he doesn't work with the Elite. Right. That's going to be weird. People are going to be chanting at him, you know, them when they're not like, seriously, they almost have, like, I think they almost have to. Like CM Punk can't come out and he can't feud with MJF or Chris Jericho. Like you have to do that now if he comes back.
That is the optimal. Otherwise, yeah, immediately is the optimal time to do it.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard to get, like, he's going to get asked questions about it again. And like, that has to be taken. I think that has to be buried quickly if he is going to come back to AEW. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we have at least one other one, right? Yep.
So Nick NP, I feel TK is way too online when he uses Twitter. We kind of alluded to that. A little bit, maybe too much information being put out there, or too much promoting.
You can, I think we have to attribute. Was it Andrew Rich who said that you can take the poster? What is the expression? You know where I'm going with this? You can take the man out of the message board. You can't take the message board out of the man.
I think many people in wrestling would be better off if they were on Twitter less.
This world might be many. Better off if many. If yeah, the world was on Twitter less.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that all we have today for the week?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm doing another scan here. I do not.
Can I just throw us way off track and can we go back to the Can't Canadian announcement? Mm-hmm. What would you say is an expectation for Forbidden Door from an attendance perspective? They sold out the United Center very quickly last year, or they didn't technically sell it out because they put more tickets on sale that didn't sell, but they sold all the available tickets originally set up for the United Center. So they're going to Toronto. They have been in Toronto once before, which they sold very quickly in a smaller building.
They did two shows in Toronto. They did a Dynamite and a Rampage.
AEW is not as hot as they were as the same time as Forbidden Door last year. But Forbidden Door was also kind of a show that maybe people weren't 100% sure what it was going to be like last year and ended up talking about over-delivering. Forbidden Door last year was a very well-received show.
Certainly versus the expectations of fans going into that show.
Yeah. And so we're talking, they're not running the Coca-Cola Coliseum, which, so they're running the big building in Toronto. Mm-hmm. They're running where the Raptors play. So they could sell probably 13 or 14,000 tickets if they can get that demand. Yeah. Do you expect them to be, how do you expect that they didn't sell nearly that number for Revolution in San Francisco?
Right. Revolution.
Do you have any expectation about
not quite sellouts? I believe certainly Revolution was not.
Where was full?
Full was in gear? Newark. I was there. It was in Prudential Center. It was pretty full though. Rampage.
What was the number for Full Gear?
That was 11. That was November. It was 12,106 is what WrestleTix had.
Okay. That's pretty close. That's not a sellout.
12,708. So it's like 600 short of
but configuration. I would say that's a very strong number for that building. So
Revolution did 8,912 and capacity configuration, how it was configured, 10,696.
So that's could have definitely done bigger. I mean, basically what I think of is if you're in an NBA building
at the Shea Center,
if you're in an NBA building, there really is not that tremendous variety in size between NBA buildings.
Yeah.
But if you're in an NBA building with appropriate staging, what is considered standard for stages and things like that now, 13 to 14,000 is a sellout, basically. I would say, like, I think Dave set the number, like, if they do bigger than 8,000, he would consider that successful for Forbidden Door.
I think they should be able to do 13,000 here.
Yeah, so you think that they should be able to do that?
They should be pretty close to a sellout because, they have been to Toronto before, but not for a pay-per-view and not for I think Forbidden Door is a bigger draw than Revolution or Full Gear is as a brand.
I think you'll get more you almost get more fly-ins because of the hardcore New Japan fans that are dispersed around the country that maybe would be interested in flying to the show as opposed to Revolution, which is just a regular AEW pay-per-view. So plans made like that. Now, how sizable is that population? Probably not huge, but if it's an extra 1,000 or 2,000 people across the entire country and maybe some people from overseas making the trip as well, that's enough from a live attendance perspective. I mean, Dave saying 8,000 was, I mean, they did 7,300 for a show in Winnipeg this week. So I would imagine they could do 8,000 for a pay-per-view in Toronto. But this Canadian tour, they are really going after the Canadian market with this show, with this tour. They're not doing Vancouver, which is kind of interesting. Right. And they're not doing Montreal, which is also kind of interesting.
Yes, Quebec. But they are doing similar.
Yeah, Quebec City. And they're not doing Ottawa either, right?
No. Yeah. This is all sort of like middle Canada, right?
Yeah.
Except for Toronto. Although they're doing Hamilton.
They call them the Canadian prairies, Brandon. But, you know, Regina, Saskatoon, Edmonton, Calgary.
Yes.
Interesting that Calgary is the biggest city that they're doing, and they're not doing a Dynamite or Rampage. They're doing the house show in the largest city. That's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, WWE did tremendous business running the same area of Canada, I believe, like last fall. And I thought WWE did a great job being like kind of since touring kind of returned from the pandemic, hitting those markets first with tapings for Raw and SmackDown. I thought it was a miss by AEW to not get there sooner. Perhaps there were issues that prevented that from happening. But I think it's, you know, AEW, really the story of AEW touring in 2023 is that they are hitting every new market that they haven't gotten to yet.
Yes. Yes. In the new year, we talked about this. There's almost no market-to-market comparisons that I can even make, except for the Inglewood show.
And we talked about this a lot towards the end of 2022 about, you know, are they running Pittsburgh too much? Are they running Boston? Are they running Philadelphia? Are they running Chicago too much? And this year, they have really expanded their touring. And for all of the, you know, a lot of the metrics for AEW are trending downwards, but one of them that they seem to be doing pretty good for Q1 at least is attendance, because they're in so many of these new markets and they're doing things like they did 7,300 people for a Dynamite on Wednesday, which is a very, very healthy number for them.
Still waiting for the UK debut, which I think is promised in 2023. And I'm guessing the delay to get into Canada and as well to get into the UK is around visa related things that I imagine you can't just go to this country and fly your people in there and have them work. There's probably a lot of, you know, visa paperwork that needs to get done.
Yeah. And that's a key thing as well. And I think, it'll be interesting to see. Not only obviously they're doing well in these new markets for the most part, there have been some misses. I think the El Paso and Laredo shows were disappointing, but I think shows in places, even places where tickets started a little slow, like Sacramento, tickets were a little bit slow at first, but then they really picked up. I think that is, you know, they ended up doing solid numbers, and their tour in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle and Portland, was very good. I think San Francisco was weird because they hit it three times in 1 week. But they're really spreading out, and it'll be interesting to see if diversifying and not going to the same places as frequently allows them to draw bigger when they do return to places like Philadelphia and Boston and Chicago, because they wouldn't haven't been there that recently.
I think there was concern too about going to the West Coast and having a show start at 5 p.m. local time on a weekday,
right,
when people maybe still be at work or just getting out of work, which I don't completely understand, because it's not a hurdle for WWE apparently.
They really checked off. They finally announced the San Diego show, which had kind of stood out as like the one really big market that they hadn't been in yet. And now I can't even think
for that.
It's a slow start for the San Diego shows, but
yeah,
we've seen, like I said, like I just said with Sacramento, we've seen the buying habits shift a little bit from like instantly everyone buying tickets quickly. They're becoming much more gradual with their ticket sales, which is kind of similar to what we see with WWE. WWE sells more tickets, but the WWE pace has become AEW's ticket selling pace, which is they're doing a little bit more in the last few weeks than they were before. And so they're becoming more WWE-like in the way that they sell tickets, which makes sense as a more established brand. As the brand becomes more established, they begin to mimic the patterns of the more established brand.
So the Saddle Dome tickets have already gone on sale. I don't think WrestleTix has reported on that, but it is in the spreadsheet.
And it's also from that press release, it seems to be tied into some sort of, you know, the Stampede festival. So what is that, a bot show by any chance? Like, what is the
well, WWE did that years ago, the Calgary Stampede. That was like at the end of the pay-per-view was the end of like the rodeo festival. Yeah, so I think it's just capitalizing on the large population of Canadians that come into town for that.
It's so strange to me that that show is not a Dynamite or a Rampage, and yet you're going to Saskatoon, which is a much smaller market, and you're running a live event, and you're running a taping there. Maybe that's just the way they're
in Regina
works.
The night before for Rampage, and they're in Saskatoon on the Wednesday before. Yeah,
right. So, I would look at Calgary, which is the biggest city on the Canadian prairies, and be like, that would be where I would want to run it. And also, Calgary is just a tremendously significant wrestling city.
That would be a I'm sorry.
No, I said I'd like to know what would why decision would be for that.
I would say that they should have that on TV, especially they could do the Owen Hart tournament concluded on that or something like that too, and I think that would be a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Gullo, because it's around the same time period, I think, right? Like you know, where they would typically do the Owen. I mean, you could do that in Edmonton or one of the, you know, the other markets, but it makes a ton of sense to do something related to that in Calgary.
And I think, as John Way have already pointed out, this is a huge opportunity to have Bruce Hart on the show.
Mm-hmm. It's so if we look at markets AEW hasn't been in, the ones that stand out are Vancouver in Montreal, which of course Montreal is a tremendous wrestling city, as we saw at Elimination Chamber. You know, Ottawa, Quebec City. Those would be, but in America, I'm trying to think, like, have they been to Oklahoma City yet?
No.
That's the one in my head that stands out as far as like a city that, you know, is big and has a professional sports team in it, you know, a major sports team in it. Yeah. That seems to be, but outside
get
of that.
JR doing local media with JK.
Yeah. They've never been to Virginia Beach, but they've been to other cities.
And that's
cities
a growing area, though, that little.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about like cities ranked by U.S. population and where they haven't been yet. And those would be the two that stand out. They haven't been to Albuquerque, New Mexico. But we're getting much smaller than like this discussion 6 months ago where we're like, they haven't been to Phoenix. They haven't been to San Diego. They haven't been to the Bay Area. They've really covered their bases there with shows. And now they're filling in with different ones. Have they been to Omaha, Nebraska? I can't recall. But
as far as internationally, right, the UK tour, it is happening. We've heard them discuss it. Do you think Japan and Australia are possibilities? I would say Mexico, but I know like ticket sales in Mexico might not be worth it profitability wise. But Japan and Australia seem like they would be strong, maybe at least just a house show, if not, you know, a Dynamite.
Australia, historically, Australia is wrestling starved, and you can go there. If you're a big wrestling company, you can go there and draw very well. Is that cost effective? I don't know. The big thing is because they don't have a robust touring schedule of house shows the way like WWE does. Like WWE can go to Europe and they can run shows in Paris and Switzerland and Germany and presumably make money off of those because their international brand is very strong. And they also kind of have house shows and the infrastructure is kind of set up there. I don't know if AEW went to Australia and ran a bunch of shows, if that would be profitable for them. I would slide against that. If they were to run a taping in Australia, I think maybe that you would probably draw a really big audience. Again, is that cost effective to fly everyone down to Australia? I don't know. Selfishly, selfishly, I would love it if they went to Japan and they went to Sumo Hall and or Budokan Hall and they did a joint promotion show in Japan and they could tape a Dynamite in Japan and they could show it later that day. Like, I think that would be a very cool thing that would really diversify Dynamite from a week to week basis, which would be like, okay, they're doing this different kind of show, similar to how they did the cruise show where it was just like, it was a show that was different that you wouldn't normally see. And I think you could even get away with maybe doing a joint promotion show in Mexico City. Who knows what their relationship is like with AAA or one of the major Mexican companies. They certainly possess – AEW certainly possesses the talent at their disposal to draw well in Mexico, I think. They have Rush. They have the Lucha Brothers. They have people like Kenny Omega who have been pushed in Mexico. They have
access
some
to
like,
Vikingo.
Right. Do they have access to Vikingo in Mexico? Who knows? But they have legitimate drawing cards in Mexico. So I would imagine they could draw in Mexico, whether or not it makes sense from a TV perspective to put it there. But yeah, I mean, I would wonder if they would do Europe. Like if they're going to go to London, is it feasible to go to Paris? Is it feasible to go to Germany? Is it feasible to go to maybe some other venues in Europe? And obviously it helps from an international perspective. If you are, you know, if you have live events there, it helps your brand for sure. And WWE has done very well recently in places like Paris. And they're kind of those, some, and a lot of those places are wrestling starved, especially coming out of the pandemic.
Okay.
Remember when WWE was really big in Italy?
Is this like the 2000s when they had really strong international business?
They did title changes there.
They had a they had a very good like TV slot in Italy, and like I think it's SmackDown was on in Italy in like the mid 2000s, and like Rey Mysterio and Dave Bautista were like huge stars in Italy, and it was kind of like one of those things that kind of faded away. But I do think about like if AEW could get some sort of television deal internationally there, it could be a real boon to business if they were to really establish themselves in a European country that might be
on TV in Italy, I think on Sky.
Yeah. But I'm thinking like a prime time network slot, which I think is what they were in when SmackDown got really over there. It was kind of like a small place in time kind of thing, but it has like, I think international growth, international television and international growth is obviously a huge place where AEW can probably see a lot of room for improvement just because the market to capitalize on it is there. I mean, WWE has done a very good job at that. And obviously they've had a massive head start as a brand, but that's something that I think I would keep an eye on over the next year or so, as far as potential growth for AEW that maybe we don't see here in the US if we're just looking at, you know, American based metrics.
Yeah. And they obviously have TV. They have strong TV in the UK on ITV. They have TV in France and Germany. They have less strong TV through DAZN, through other parts of Eastern Europe, like Poland and whatnot. But, yeah. Okay. Anything else?
I believe, let me just do one more scan, but I think that's all we have. Yes.
Saskatoon is all elite.
Yes.
Thank you, Rangar.
Say, Saskatoon, who would forget the Ric Flair Bret Hart match from Saskatoon?
Hey, go Rough Riders. Riders.
Where Bret Hart won the title.
Yeah.
He won the title for his first world title in Saskatoon.
Okay. There's still, if you haven't read it, there's the report I did. We talked about this already on Thursday about the Royal Rumble report I did for the public records requests that we made to the city of San Antonio, showing how they came to their 51,338 announced attendance, the gate being $7.3 million in net revenue to WWE. Looking like the announced gate of $7.7 million was including service fees. That is for free for everybody to read on WrestleNomics.com. Any other plugs?
No, I already got my Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast plug-in. I did appear on Josh Mason's Punch Out over on Figure Four Wrestling, Wrestling Observer News.com this week. I had on a show. It's free. That's free to listen to for anybody. Just over on the Observer site. We talked a lot about Wardlow. We talked about kind of what's happened to him over the last year or so. We talked a lot about like QT Marshall and his Twitter interactions and kind of social media use in general when it comes to being in professional wrestling. We talked about WWE production and kind of, you know, AEW production versus WWE production and those kind of aspects. So people can check that out if they want. I think went up on Tuesday.
And Gullo?
On High Spots with the Civoldi Wrestling Network, they should be uploading a couple matches that they commentary for Jim Duggan and Bubba Ray Dudley from like 1990, I think it's late 93, early 94, from ICC.
Would you say that's a dream match?
You know what? It was for those fans, I'll tell you. speaking of dream matches, there was a DX Headbangers match from IWA Puerto Rico that I did commentary for that should be up loaded as well. Brandon, it was 7 minutes and 30 seconds long. They locked up 4 minutes in, a total of 3 bumps.
Outstanding. This is in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. We'll be back next week for the week before WrestleMania, and then we'll be doing WrestleMania the week after that, after the first day. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.